school districts, especially in rural northern and southwestern Wisconsin, say they're having trouble finding qualified candidates to fill open positions. At the same time, teacher prep programs at universities across the state say they're seeing fewer enrollees. This has some claiming that Wisconsin has a teacher shortage and that it's getting worse. Today we'll talk with local education experts to see whether they believe a teacher shortage exists and what may be causing it. That's this hour on the West Side. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC, Menominee Eau Claire, and 88.7 WRFW in River Falls. In the studio with me today, in no particular order, I'll introduce Bruce Quinton. He is the superintendent of the Pepin Area School District. He's also a member of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. Bruce Quinton, welcome back.
Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. Also joining me in studio, Carmen Manning. She is the Dean of the College of Education and Human Sciences at UW-Eau Claire. Carmen Manning, welcome back to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. Listeners, we would like to welcome you back to the program as well. If you've got a question or a comment about this reported teacher shortage, do you believe that there is one? Have you seen evidence of it? Do you work in a school? Let us know what you think. 800-228-5615. A lot of people have been pointing to Act 10 as some of the causes for the changes in teacher availability and the number of people going into education. Let us know what you think, if that's had a positive or a negative impact. We're open to hear your thoughts and to try to answer your questions. 1-800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. So, Carmen Manning, in a nutshell, is there a teacher shortage in Wisconsin?
Yes, I think there is a teacher shortage in Wisconsin, but I don't think it's unique to Wisconsin. There's a teacher shortage nationally, and we see pretty significant data across the nation that fewer people are going into the field of education. And it's a dual problem. People are also leaving education at a higher rate than other nations, other high-achieving nations have about a 4% attrition rate. In the U.S., we have about an 8% attrition rate of teachers. And so it's not just an input problem. It's not just that we don't have enough young people or career changers who want to go into education, but we're also seeing people leaving the discipline, leaving the field in a higher rate than we see in other places across the world.
We'll break down some of the possible reasons for that later on in the hour, but Bruce Quinton, I'll go to you. Same question from your perspective in the Pepin Area School District, also with your work with the Rural Schools Alliance. Is there a teacher shortage?
Absolutely. We're seeing fewer applications for positions that for our science position 2 years ago, one application. Even at levels of like an elementary teacher position, we used to see 80 applications. We see 20.
Hmm. So then what might be – Carmen Manning, you mentioned this is the national trend. Also, there was a lot of people saying that, well, it's Act 10, but then others say that, no, this trend has been happening since before 2011 when Act 10 was passed. So what are some of the – reasons for this? Has anyone looked into it and studied it?
Yep. Well, we have a lot of data about what's happening across the nation among teachers. We find that nationally that enrollments in teacher preparation programs are down about 35% over since about 2009. And so this is a national trend that's happening. Part of it is that teachers nationally are not that well paid compared to other college graduates. Teachers make on average about 20% less than a college graduate, and by mid-career about 30% less. So folks are saying, maybe that's not a career that I want to go into. Hmm. We're also finding that young people aren't wanting to go into teaching because they don't see teaching as a profession with a great deal of esteem. I think it used to be that you were a very valued member of a community when you were a teacher. I think sometimes now that's not always the case, right? The teachers get a lot of harassment and hard times about why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that? And people are saying, you know, I don't want to do that. And so there's a struggle to entice young people into teaching when, you know, it's not seen as a profession that's going to be something that they want to enjoy for the rest of their lives.
That is very interesting. The esteem of teaching, I mean, during the battle that ensued after Act 10, we saw a lot of that division between teachers and not, people that weren't in that, maybe in the private sector, pointing to each other, saying, well, you've got this and you've got this. As far as the pay, I thought one of the promises for teachers was that you've got this benefits package. It's usually, you know, it's kind of a government job and you've got some security and whatnot. How has that changed?
Well, I don't know the ins and outs of that. I think partially that depends on districts now, right?
There are some pieces,
and that's one of the implications of Act 10. And I'm sure Bruce can talk a little bit about how that works as a district administrator and how you try to make your particular district a place that's a destination, right? And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that's changed for school districts is they need to be the kind of district that is attractive to teachers. And it may not just be about pay. It may be about the kind of climate that you have as a teacher in that district. How much autonomy and collaboration and input do you have? And so I think Bruce could probably speak to that in his district.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rich, you said it well. The focus on Act 10 was the benefit level of people in the public sector. You know, I went around to the state capitol because the report I had showed that salary and benefits were lower in the public sector compared to the private. But we were all focused on the benefit level between the two, and that focus on public employees having better benefits. And if you think about teachers in particular, you're talking about people who do value those types of things over the salary. I don't think higher salaries are going to attract – obviously higher salaries will help attract more teachers, but I think quality benefits and good working conditions are the things that are valued and important. When we went through Act 10, we in our district were very pleased with the relationship we had with our association. Collective bargaining was working very well for us. We felt we had a good contract. We were required to eliminate that and go to a handbook. Everything we legally could do, we kept in place with our collective bargaining agreement. And again, our Pepin and other small rural districts are never going to be able to compete with the larger districts in a salary standpoint. But what we try to do is provide a good working condition for our employees and try to make sure they feel valued and, again, have ownership of their role in the district. If they're our math teacher, they're our math expert.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. We're joined by Bruce Quinton of the Pepin Area School District and Carmen Manning of the College of Education and Human Sciences at UW-Eau Claire. We're talking about reports of a teacher shortage in Wisconsin and some data from the Wisconsin Budget Project suggests that the problem is especially poignant, I guess, or it's happening in greater numbers in the northern part of the state. I've got a stat here, 56% of districts looking for position or to fill positions in northern Wisconsin, 56% of the time they experienced what they called an extreme shortage based on this survey. But the survey was a one-year survey. There's still a lot of data out there that needs to be compiled. I wanted to talk about the esteem and how that's changed and what might have caused that. Again, in Wisconsin, people point to Act 10 and say that this battle caused a lot of deep hurt in between teachers and non-teachers. But nationally, is there any idea what's going on with esteem? I mean, why wouldn't teachers be held to high esteem? Is it because of how testing has changed or what we expect of them?
Yeah, I think that schooling is a complex endeavor, right? It's a very complex endeavor. And I think it's becoming more and more complex. And I think we have high expectations of our schools and our teachers to sort of handle all that and take care of it. And that becomes a burden, and that's difficult. And if you do not feel supported by your community, by your parents, in your community by your administrators, by your principal, by your colleagues, then it becomes a very lonely and difficult kind of existence to be a teacher in a classroom with students. I think part of the problem for some teachers is a lot of imposition from the outside about what they should do and how they should do it, and a lack of trust and belief in the expertise of the educator in that classroom. So as we see more, it's not just testing, but testing is a part of it. As we see more standardized testing, imposition of the way things are done in a classroom without the collaboration among educators as professionals, that becomes a difficult place for a teacher to be. And they want to seek out an opportunity where, like Bruce said, they're a valued contributor to the academic endeavor in that school district. They're not just being told by some other group of people, some administrators, some outside policy organization that says, this is the way you should do this. And so I think that plays into a part. And I think we're seeing a shift across the country with understanding that if we are going to have a professionalized teaching force, then we're going to have to treat our teachers as professionals within that. Value their expertise, value their knowledge, value what they know, value their ability to collaborate with one another to find solutions and not just be people who are told how to implement what somebody else thinks they should do. Those are the kinds of ways I think we need to create opportunities for our teachers to be the professionals that they are. And that creates the kind of working conditions where we know from research that students learn better in those conditions. And we don't lose teachers to the same extent that we do when there's an imposition of approach in a classroom.
So would it be Bruce Quinton, please jump in.
Rich, I would add this. What I have found is I think the public in general has this expectation that teachers are perfect. And when they make mistakes, you know, they really hold them to a higher standard than, you know, say someone else in another profession. Now, you know, my kids in that classroom, I get it that's important.
That's very powerful.
Yes, yes. But again, we have to remember they are human beings. They make mistakes, and you know, they're not going to live up to the expectation of perfection. But also, I mean, just in general, I mean, we need current and prospective teachers to feel like the work they do is valued by the general public. Teachers are caring and dedicated individuals. It cannot be healthy for schools, children, or society when they are demonized or not viewed as important an important asset in our communities. This attitude, real or perceived by our educators, is having a negative impact on our public schools and directly impacting high school graduates' decisions on choosing a career in education. Politicians have to stop using public education as a political football. A free and appropriate public education is a right granted to our children in the state's constitution. It is the responsibility of our elected officials, conservative or liberal, to provide this guaranteed right to our children. Using education as a wedge issue cannot continue if we truly want the best for our children's education and, in turn, the future prosperity of our state.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or a comment, please join in on the conversation. That's what really makes these programs work, is when we have a lot of participation by listeners. Was there some autonomy before that has been lost? Because I know, at least with regard to, I've got some experience with someone who is going to be a college professor. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you create your lesson plan. You do it all yourself. You don't have someone telling you. I mean, you've got certain metrics that you have to hit, but there's a lot of freedom. And was that the case? And is that less of the case with regard to public school teachers? Because I would think that they've got a more rigid formula to follow in the first place.
I think it very much depends on the district and how a district chooses to approach the teaching and learning compact, right? And how they work together as a group of educators with a variety of expertise across content areas, across developmental levels, across experiences, to figure out how we work together to bring the best educational experience in a classroom as we can. I think what we've seen a trend nationally is more and more classroom teachers have been sort of sidelined more in that conversation in many places, as we've seen the role of educational policymakers dictating what kind of testing should happen and what the outcomes should be and how we should go about pedagogically working towards those outcomes, the voice of teachers has been lost in that in many places. And that leads to this sense of not having that autonomy and not being valued as a professional and as an expert. And so there is some deprofessionalization of the teaching profession. And that leads, I think, to people say, I don't want to do that. Now, one of the things that is very problematic is there's this cyclical nature. You know, we send at UW-Eau Claire probably 500 or 600 students a semester out into the field to work with cooperating teachers in an observation or a teacher assisting or even a student teaching experience. And it saddens me when I have students who come back to me and they say things like, you know, I had a great experience. I loved being in that school. I had a fabulous cooperating teacher. But you know what she said to me? She said that if I had it to choose over again, I wouldn't become a teacher, and you should really think about that. And that's really sad, right? Because that teacher in that classroom is the backbone of our society, right? We don't have good public schools. We're sunk. And she or he is feeling like they don't want to encourage young people to do that. So we're doing some things across the nation and within the state of Wisconsin and here in Eau Claire. I know we have a partnership with the Eau Claire Public Schools to work with a program called Educators Rising. It's a high school program for kids who are interested in teaching, and collaboratively working with the university, with the Teachers Association, and with young people who see teaching as their profession, as their future, and working with them throughout high school to prepare them to go into college and be ready to be a great teacher and to go into a teacher prep program. And I think us supporting that as teacher prep in districts, as a practicing teacher association, really puts us in the place of not being responsive to these issues, but being proactive about saying, this is what's great about teaching. This is why it is a noble profession. This is how you can have an ongoing impact on an individual level with young people and on a collective level in society.
That was one of the things that was brought up by either reporting. I'm not sure if it was part of the budget project data, but they said that older teachers or people that have been disgruntled because of these changes in Wisconsin actually are trying to advocate to the younger people that are interested in it, not to go in it. That sounds like a problem for the state. Let's go to the phones. We've got Joe calling from Eau Claire. Joe, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My son and his wife were teaching in a rural district in Wisconsin, got their master's degree, were promised when they got them they'd get more money. Then the district said, it's about 6 months before they got them, well, we don't have any money for that anymore. We aren't going to pay any extra for a master's degree. In your prep time, you will be teacher's aides filling in instead of prepping for your classes because we don't have any money for that. Walker's pretty clever with his referendums. Nobody wants their taxes raised. So they applied for jobs in Minnesota and took jobs over there and are making $35,000 more a year with their master's degree than what they made here. And I think we're just becoming a farm club for other states. Why would you stay here? And on a combined income, what they were making, if they had a couple of kids, they'd qualify for reduced lunch. So that's kind of the facts. I think the younger teachers with talent are not going to stay. So that's my comment. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much for that, Joe, and best of luck to glad to hear that that your family are getting good pay. Maybe they'll come back to Wisconsin someday or not. But Bruce Quinton, I understand that there's some headhunting going on, too, with regard to high-skilled staff in Wisconsin being kind of either, I don't know if they're being picked off or if they're just looking for better alternatives. But that's the claim that a lot of people are going to Minnesota, which is just across the river from you.
And you hit on an important issue here is that we are seeing, and I think more so the young kids coming out of college are choosing to go to Minnesota as opposed to staying in Wisconsin. But I can cite a couple of examples where veteran staff have left a Wisconsin job to head across the river to Minnesota. And particularly in western Wisconsin, it's a huge issue compared to maybe the northern part of the state. I mean, we are losing quality candidates across the river to Minnesota. So what happened, whether you're in favor of Act 10 or not in favor of Act 10, one of the beneficiaries is the state of Minnesota because they're getting some of our best teachers to move over there.
What about enrollment? I want to get into some local data if we could. UW-Eau Claire, as a lot of universities across the state, has a College of Education. That's like ground zero for teacher prep. So how has enrollment been? Because nationally, we've heard about fewer students going into it from high school. What's happening locally?
Yeah, I think that UW-Eau Claire and other teacher preparation programs across the state of Wisconsin mirror the issue that we're seeing across the country. So at UW-Eau Claire in particular, since 2010, all of our teacher prep programs are down about 15% in enrollment in the aggregate. Our secondary area, which is one of the areas I'm sure Bruce struggles the most to find teachers, so high school, some middle school and high school teachers where you specialize in that particular content area, that's the area where we see the most shortage, math and science and secondary areas in particular. We've had a 27% decline since 2010 at UW-Eau Claire in secondary ed, and it's very troubling. It's an area that is a real struggle for us to entice people to come into that area. In elementary ed, we've seen about an 18% decline since 2010. We actually saw a larger dip, and now we're kind of on our way back up mm-hmm. in elementary ed, so I'm kind of hopeful that we might see some growth there, at least a leveling off maybe. One really fabulous thing to report about UW-Eau Claire is we've actually had an increase in our special education area. So since 2010, we've had a 28% increase in our special education program. Hmm. And this is really important because special education is one of the high needs areas that we see across the country and in Wisconsin. And UW-Eau Claire also has an early childhood special education program. And in the state of Wisconsin, with the implementation of 4K, universal 4K, we've seen a huge shortage in 4K teachers and early childhood teachers. And so the increase in special education in part at UW-Eau Claire is due to the implementation of an early childhood special ed program and just a real dedication by faculty in that program to try to respond and meet the needs that we see across the state in the area of special ed.
Some optimism.
Rich, could I just add?
Yeah, please.
The secondary level, just some local experiences for us. I talked about the science teacher that, you know, we had one applicant for. Technology education teacher we share with a neighboring district. We've been through 7 teachers in 7 years. And again, typically when we post that position, we have 1 or 2 applicants. About 4 years ago, we worked with a local gentleman who had an education degree, was out in the private sector working in the area of construction, and tried to grow our own. And he came in, and he was very excited to work with kids and wanted to make a difference in the world. And by about April, he said, I just got offered 6 figures in the private sector. I'm going back into the private sector. Mm-hmm. We're going through the same process now with the alternative licensure with a local construction person, and trying to again grow our own and hopefully keep someone in that position for more than 1 year. So I mean, the shortages in a number of these secondary areas are critical, and it's getting very difficult to find people for those positions.
We'll talk more about the shortages in the STEM categories when we come back. This is the West Side. I'm joined by Carmen Manning. She's the Dean of the College of Education and Human Sciences at UW-Eau Claire. Bruce Quinton is also with me. He is the superintendent of the Pepin Area School District and a member of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. If you've got a question or a comment about the teacher shortage in Wisconsin and about if you've got any ideas about how to change the trend, let us know, 1-800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Credit Union present Says You, Saturday night, May 6th, at the Lismore in downtown Eau Claire. Tickets to be part of the show's radio audience are available at WPR.org/100.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rich Kramer, joined by Bruce Quinton of the Pepin Area School District and Carmen Manning of the College of Education and Human Sciences at UW-Eau Claire. We're talking about the teacher shortage in Wisconsin. Different data will tell you different things, but the idea is that school districts are seeing fewer applications for teaching positions, especially in the northern part. I also hear it's pretty bad down in the southwestern Wisconsin as well. And also, the teacher prep programs are seeing fewer people coming from high school going into the field of education. If you've got a question or comment or a solution, let us know. 1-800-228-5615. So I wanted to break down this, you know, the shortage that I'm reading about has to do mostly with STEM classes, and that is science, technology. I can't even think of it. It's mathematics, science, and tech, basically. And Bruce Quinton, you mentioned that you've tried to farm or tried to grow your own. I love that analogy, grow your own. And you talked about an alternative licensure program. Now, I remember back in 2015, there was a proposal that was inserted into the budget, and I didn't think it made it through, that would allow people with a four-year degree, or even in some cases people without a degree, to be able to teach certain courses, like tech ed courses. Mm-hmm. Did that survive the cut, and is that what you're talking about when you say grow your own?
Well, in the first example I used, it was a degree teacher, just not in that area. Uh-huh. The second example I'm using is the alternative licensing process. It's a gentleman who does not have a four-year degree, but he has tech ed credits. He went to a tech school, and has been in the business world for probably 15, 20 years. And again, there's a process, a formula they use, and if you've got the classes that are required with the number of work experiences required, you can obtain a full Wisconsin licensure to teach tech ed.
And that's a new thing, like within the last?
It's got to be within the last year or two that's become an option.
So is because part of becoming a teacher and part of getting licensed is learning how students learn and learning how to address certain behavioral issues and all that. So how does that work if you've got a fellow that's been in construction, you know, maybe as a foreman where people take your orders?
Absolutely.
Trying to teach kids.
Absolutely. And you're looking for, in all honesty, you're looking for a personality type.
Yeah.
That has the ability to work with kids. The gentleman I'm talking about has coached kids in the past for us and has done a nice job. But part of that, it then falls onto the district. And as we talk about the flexibilities that we're talking about, a lot of responsibilities falling back on the district to provide those kind of trainings, resources. We plan to support this gentleman in the spring here and into the fall with opportunities to go visit and observe other tech ed teachers that we think are outstanding and hopefully pick up some of the pedagogy to become a great teacher.
Carmen Manning, with regard to licensure, and there was just something that was inserted that Governor Walker proposed in his current budget that I want to talk about as well, but the idea of loosening some of the requirements for getting a teaching license or teaching a class at a district like Pepin, is there a possibility that those loosened requirements have led to fewer people saying, going into programs like the College of Education because they'd think, well, I don't need it?
Yeah, I don't think we're seeing that, because I think that these are all sort of proposals at this point. The work that the Department of Public Instruction is doing in collaboration with school districts and in collaboration with teacher preparation programs is really about introducing flexibility. We have a pretty complicated licensure system in the state of Wisconsin.
Yes.
And so the state superintendent, Tony Evers, has put together several work groups. Professional Standards Council, which is a legislatively mandated advisory group to him, is working on a strategic plan around these issues of attracting, preparing, and retaining quality teachers in the state of Wisconsin. And from some of those recommendations, Superintendent Evers has put together a variety of work groups that have looked at both licensure things and also some issues around esteem and retention and working conditions for teachers to try to make Wisconsin a place where people want to not go across the border to Minnesota or to Texas or Colorado or California and take a teaching job, but to stay right here in the state of Wisconsin where they were trained as excellent teachers. Our teachers are hired and snapped up by other states like you can't believe because we have high-quality teacher prep programs.
We are known for that.
Absolutely. So the flexibilities are around, I think, an understanding that there are a variety of skill sets that a teacher needs. And people come to that. Even a well-prepared first-year teacher is still a first-year teacher and is a novice and needs the support of a district and support of colleagues and ongoing support perhaps from their teacher prep program to help them continue to grow. We all know the first day we stepped on the job, whatever our job is, that first day we weren't perfect and ready to go with everything, and we learned over time, and that's true of teachers too. And we have to be patient with our new and novice teachers as they learn those types of things, and with our mid-career and late-career teachers who learn new ways. Generations of students change. The characteristics of learners today are very different than they were, I'm thinking, when Bruce and I started teaching some years ago. And so we have to be learners and grow. Part of the flexibility, I think, has to be that we have to work collaboratively between teacher preparation and between school districts to support teachers however they are in their program. So if we have someone who's coming from the private sector who doesn't have that child development background, a pedagogical understanding, but they have strong content knowledge, well, then maybe we can work collaboratively to figure out how we support that new and novice teacher. Other teachers in the building have that expertise and they can be a support to that. What we need is time and flexibility within districts to be able to do that. And so that's an important piece of helping teachers stay. You know, part of our teacher shortage problem is teachers don't stay. And so creating those working conditions for someone, partially it might be about pay, but what we hear from teachers is it's not usually about pay. Yeah, more pay would be great, but it's about working conditions. It's about time to collaborate. It's about feeling like the work they're doing is meaningful and respected.
So districts, I hate to boil everything down to money, but if districts have more of a responsibility to kind of nurture these people and kind of give them the inside track on how to, if they're coming from the professional world, to deal with children. I mean, that sounds like it could take time, and time takes money in this, in every other endeavor.
And
Bruce Quinton.
I would just add that exactly. I mean, you know, we talk about the private sector, the public sector. I mean, it's a supply and demand issue. You know, we've got low supply, high demand in the private sector. That means more money.
Yeah,
that's not an option for us, at least in Pepin, and I'm sure across the state. We haven't seen an increase in revenue for our per pupil counts in almost a decade. The current budget looks very promising as far as the amount of new money we'll see, but again, it's been a decade. It's hard to compete for teachers or pay them more when we aren't getting an inflationary increase either. So our costs go up, and we keep trying to do the best we can for our teachers, and I think we've done a good job in Pepin. But again, I mean, I know there's a number of districts where teachers have seen salary freezes. And the example the caller had about they're no longer giving any reward for getting a master's degree in teaching, a reading degree, I mean, the dollars aren't there.
I want to get more into the teacher pay in just a bit with regard to Act 10 and how that's changed landscape. But a reminder to callers, 1-800-228-5615. If you'd like to jump in on this conversation, we've got two experts here who can answer your questions. 1-800-228-5615. Why the STEM categories? Carmen Manning, why is it harder to find teachers or why are there fewer teachers that are graduating from programs like yours with specialties in mathematics or science or technology? Do you, and I don't even know how this works, do you train tech ed instructors at UWEC?
We don't. At UW-Eau Claire, we do not have a tech ed program. They have that tech ed program at Stout, which is a high-quality, wonderful program. Mm-hmm. We do math and science teaching at UW-Eau Claire, along with many other institutions across the state. A huge part of it is that competition in supply and demand. It's very easy for folks who are interested in those content areas to go into industry, into the workforce, engineering, or lots of other areas and make more money and have a different kind of opportunity in their teaching than in teaching. And so we have a hard time attracting people to come and to stay in those areas. And it's just so foundationally important that we have strong math and science and tech ed teachers in our high schools. But we continue to work on ways, alternative pathways, try to entice people out of industry to come and be a teacher. And we're seeing some of those programs work across the country. But again, it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of energy, a lot of focus on small numbers, right? And that, mm-hmm. again, comes back to what kind of support do we have within the university system to be able to look at and focus on a niche group of people. It's hard to spend a lot of time and money on bringing a small number of science teachers into the field when maybe I could just pour some more money into my elementary ed program, which already has a large number, and just increase that a little bit, be more cost effective for me. But that's not what we need to do to be able to meet the shortage. So we're looking at ways that we can be partners with districts. This idea of the grow your own, identifying early on within your school districts, students who would be a good prospective teacher or interested in staying in the area. Working with some districts, UW-Eau Claire is working with some districts in the center of the state to do that sort of thing. Identify early on young people that they know want to stay in the area and be a teacher, helping them find a pathway that's cost effective, possibly doing an associate's degree through the UW colleges system, and then having articulation agreements between the colleges into a four-year institution to make that more cost-effective pathway. It's one of the things we know nationally from data is that going into the teaching profession is an expensive endeavor, right? Mm-hmm. That helping students with keeping costs down. We have a great number of standardized tests that have been piled on to teacher prep programs. In some cases, that's an additional $1,000 for a young person to be able to meet the cost needs of taking these exams to prove that they're ready to go. And the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction is working with teacher preparation programs to think about alternative ways that we might reduce those kinds of costs and use existing structures to say, our students have the content knowledge. They've demonstrated through their work in classrooms that they have the, especially in a case like mathematics, they have the mathematical knowledge that they need. Do we really need to have them take a test that costs $130 or $150 to demonstrate once again that they have the knowledge that they've already demonstrated? So working to – that kind of goes back to that esteem question too. Working to value the knowledge and contributions that our teachers are ready to make without saying, but now you're going to have to prove one more time mm-hmm. that you're ready to teach. Oh, and then there's another. I often talk about it. You have to jump through a hoop and then we start it on fire and you have to jump through it again while it's on fire. That's all a part of making teaching an attractive opportunity for young people to go into.
Back to the phones. We've got Kathy in Eau Claire. Kathy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just had a comment. I have a daughter who was actually a biology major and got her master's in education through the Teach for America program and taught eighth grade science in the States, and currently she's teaching overseas eighth grade science again in the American International School. And she's looking for a job back in the States, but she's not looking in Wisconsin because of things that she's heard and looking at salaries. And so just wanted to make a comment that she's looking elsewhere.
Gotcha. Thanks so much for that, Kathy. Appreciate it. With regard to perception, Bruce Quinton, the reality of Act 10 is districts have been learning to cope with it and have been adjusting to the change. And I've read a lot of things in preparing for this that a lot of teachers even say that we're just kind of resetting in Wisconsin and we're going to get used to it and everything's going to be okay. There's actually optimism in there, but there's still this perception. And we were talking, there's a sense of that there's a pessimism. That's what I saw in one article from the Journal Sentinel. Is that the case?
Well, I think it goes back to the respect issue and that, you know, in this part of the state, I can look across the border and you know, I see collective bargaining rights, that kind of respect for the profession still in place. And in our state, you know, they no longer have those some of those abilities. And, you know, it does affect the decision. I know my former board president, his daughter went into education. She's teaching in Minnesota. And we had an elementary position open up and we were just chatting one day. And I said, so you think Sam will apply for the job? And he just did not think that was going to happen. And again, that has a lot to do with life circumstances, not so much just, you know, it's not just Act 10.
Right.
But again, I have to be honest with you. It was it would be hard for me to tell him I think she should jump from Minnesota to Wisconsin right now. I'd love to have her as a teacher. But to tell her to jump from the Minnesota system right now to the Wisconsin system until we get some things squared away, I'm not prepared to do that.
Well, let's take our final break. We need to pay the bills here, and we'll be back with more West Side. We'll wrap up our discussion, talk about what can be done, what is being done, more about what is being done to try to alleviate this teacher shortage in Wisconsin. 1-800-228-5615. We've got Rolf on the line. Hang tight. We'll be back in just a minute. This is the West Side.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Partnering with local businesses to bolster the dairy industry, UW-Madison and Wisconsin work together for a stronger state. More at reinvestuw.org. Support also comes from Ganchert Nursery and Landscapes, offering full-service landscape design and installation to Madison and surrounding communities, providing spring cleanup and seasonal pruning of trees and shrubs. Learn more at ganchert.com.
The Bridge to Hope is the 24-hour crisis line for people being or aware of someone being abused. The number is 715-235-9074, 235-9074. You can also access information online at thebridgetohope.org.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good Monday morning to you. I'm Rich Kramer. Joining me in the studio, Carmen Manning is the Dean of the College of Education and Human Sciences at UW-Eau Claire. That is where all the best teachers come from. And also joining me in studio is Bruce Quinton. He is the superintendent of the Pepin Area School District. That's where all the best students come from. Isn't
there
that correct?
Go. There you go.
1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment. We're talking about a teacher shortage in Wisconsin, some of the causes we've gone through. We've got about 10 minutes to talk about what some of the solutions are or some of the things that districts and prep courses are trying to reach out. But first, we've got another caller on the line, Rolf in Haywood. Haywood, are you there?
I am, thanks.
Is it Haywood or Hayward?
It's Haywood, yep.
Haywood, all right.
Northwest Wisconsin.
Gotcha.
And I'm calling because we have a couple of kids in the Haywood School District, one in high school and one in middle school. And as a household, we are all in favor for supporting and compensating and retaining teachers and doing all we can to help the school district, even when our kids are out of the system.
Hmm.
But it seems to me like your panel has already brought up that it goes beyond just paying teachers well, and it also speaks to the, you know, the culture of the district, the school board, and all the elements that make up, you know, what's going to bring a good education to the kids and not only retaining teachers. And we have some concerns. Hayward is about ready to go through its second try at a referendum up here to raise money for the district, and which all seems good on the face of it, but it seems like a lot of transparency is due, and we're not sure that we're getting that, even though they, you know, the district managers want to make themselves available to talk about why they want to raise funds. So I guess what I'm saying is that I have a daughter who's now bored as a freshman and we don't feel like we have any options for getting her classes beyond, like for high achieving kids. They've told us that there are no options. So even if the teachers are going to get paid really well and salaries increase, a lot of stuff seems to have to come together beyond just, you know, that component of it. So thanks for the good show.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to know that our signal makes it all the way up to Hayward, too. Bruce Quinton, I want to ask you, with districts being pinched budgetarily, having to go to referendum, that creates all kind of – I'm wondering, first of all, with Act 10, is there more of a chance for districts to kind of be unique in how they change their culture as opposed to when everything was kind of – when there was the teachers' unions? You know what I'm trying to get at? Is
there may be. Back to the caller's question.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, I spoke earlier about it's been almost a decade since we've seen an increase per pupil in the rate of inflation. So I don't know the Hayward situation. I don't want to try to speak to it other than I'll just relate it to our district is, do we have fewer opportunities for kids? Absolutely. We haven't got an increase in inflationary increase in almost a decade. And as far as the referendum goes, I don't have any doubt in my mind that if they want to continue to compensate teachers and hopefully start providing some of those opportunities they've had to cut over the last decade, they're going to have to go to referendum to do so.
And going to referendum repeatedly, doesn't that stir up some ill will in the community? Because, I mean, we've seen statewide, I looked at some DPI numbers, and referendums are passing at a higher percentage than they did in the past, sometimes as high as 70%+. But is there a danger that if a district keeps going, that people will start to kind of resent it for raising their taxes?
I think the rate of passage shows you the kind of commitment that local citizens have for their public schools. But I would go back to this necessity to continue to pass referendums. Go back to the state constitution. It is our responsibility as a state to provide a free and appropriate public education to the children of our state. That should not be done by each individual district having to pass referendums to do so. That is a state responsibility, not a local responsibility. So again, we have to fund education at an adequate level if we want all kids in our state to receive a quality education.
And we mentioned the budget, the state budget right now, and as Governor Walker has proposed it, has some pretty substantial increases for per pupil. It's a different aid formula. We've been through this on past programs, but Are you licking your chops?
Well, we're not licking our chops. It doesn't put us back to where we were before Act
right,
10
right.
and the cuts that education received. But it's encouraging, and I think we have to show appreciation for the fact that in any budget time that we're getting an increase under these conditions. And hopefully we can sustain these types of increases into the future is what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that signal of $200 per pupil and then $204 that the second year is an indication of what we can expect in the future. But it is hard to make plans long-term when there's no guarantee in funding into the future.
And I think,
Carmen Manning.
I think related to that, the response to the caller, what we need as a community, as the state of Wisconsin, is to be all together advocating for the good of our students. And I think that's what you see with referenda. I think that's what we see a little bit in this budget, right? The citizens of Wisconsin are saying enough with the schools, and that understanding that administrators and teachers and families and community members who no longer have children in schools, that we all need to work together to support public education in the state of Wisconsin if we are going to thrive. It is the backbone of what we are and who we are. If we want to remain a state that is competitive with bringing people into our state instead of students going to high school and college and then leaving our state, the crux of that comes from public education, and we need to work not against one another, but we need to work together. So K-12 schools, higher education, communities, school boards, administrators need to come together with one voice saying, this is important to all of us. And I think we're starting to see that. And I appreciate the support of the caller and saying that he wants opportunities not only for his child, but for all the children in his district and for all the children across the state of Wisconsin. And that's what it's going to take as a message to get us to where we are putting more money back into education instead of continuing to draw money out of it and expecting local districts to dig in their pockets and find pennies in the couch cushions to be able to try to create opportunities for kids, because that's a long-term losing strategy.
So this coming together and everyone kind of getting on the same table, is that what it would take to kind of change this idea of to bring up the prestige that once was? I mean, how do you change You kind of described it, but you have to change everyone's ideas and culture. I mean, that seems like a really heavy lift.
Well, I think it goes back to sort of the roots of what public education were in this country, right? That the founding of free, open public education in this society was about the betterment of society. It's public education is a public good. It's not an individual experience, but it's about advancing opportunities for all children and for society. And that understanding that it's not about my child. I mean, I have three children who are in three different schools. It's not about their individual experience. It's about their collective experience. And when we all work together and we value our teachers and we value our schools and we respect what's happening there and we are willing to, and the referendum passage says that this is where we are. We're willing to put our hard-earned dollars into the good of our schools. That's what's going to turn this around and take us where we need to go. That we stop pointing fingers at one another and saying, you're the problem, you're the problem, you're the problem. And instead we come together and we say, it's not going to work. Society is not going to work unless we're all working together for the good of our young people. That's the way it's going to get better.
And Rich, I would just add that we need politicians to quit playing politics with public education to their personal gain and start funding education to the gain of our students and the future of our state.
That might be easier said than done, Bruce Quinton. But politics, if there is a political issue, education is got to be, it's always been one of the most. So how do you divorce it from that?
Well, I think it's important to you know, conservatives and liberals, a solid, fundamental public education for all kids in our state. And if we're looking to the long-term future, we can't be successful as a state without quality public education in our state. So again, I don't think it's a right or left issue. It should be the most center issue there is out there. But unfortunately, sometimes it's expedient, and sometimes we have lobbyists who want to sway things one way or another, and that's how we fund our political system. That sometimes, you know, that thing that should be the center gets played off of from the left and the right.
It's funny how that works in so many different fields. That's our time. Thank you so much to my guests. Bruce Quinton is the superintendent of the Pepin Area School District. He's also involved with the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. Thank you, Bruce Quinton. I appreciate having you.
Thank you, Rich.
Carmen Manning, thank you. She is the Dean of the College of Education and Human Sciences at UW-Eau Claire. Thanks so much, Carmen Manning.
Thank you, Rich.
Also, thanks to our callers. A lot of great questions, a lot of great comments. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.